Alzheimer's disease sucks. Slowly, that person that you once knew starts to slip away. They are physically there, but their mind just isn't the same. And this change, it doesn't happen overnight. It starts off with the small things, and then it progresses. So what if there was a way to figure out the early warning signs and slow it down or even prevent it? On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are asking, can you stop Alzheimer's before it even starts? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them to weigh in on the tricky questions that may help us understand our world a little bit better. And for this question, we are off to the fields around the Warnford Hospital in Oxford to find a nice park bench and talk about the brain with Jennifer Lawson, a trials manager in the Department of Psychiatry.
I've been very lucky in that there's no Alzheimer's disease history in my family. One of my very best friends when I was growing up, he and I used to spend a lot of time at his grandmother's house. She lived around the corner from our school. And she was a wonderful Irish grandmother, and she'd always try and feed us. She'd always have these little sandwiches and cakes and things, and she'd just be, whenever you thought you'd had too many little cakes and things, she'd come in, she'd go, it's just a tiny bite, go on, just another one, it's fine. And it was just wonderful. When I was doing my A-levels, we found out that she had Alzheimer's disease, and she progressed over the next several years and got more and more unwell. She ended up in a care home, and eventually she died. And it was, although she wasn't my grandmother, I spent a lot of time with her, and it was very sad. And I saw what it did to the family as well.
According to the British Alzheimer's Foundation, 850,000 people have dementia in the UK. That's 850,000 families that are going through this. And researchers believe by 2025, as the population gets older, this number is going to jump to 1 million.
Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia. It accounts for about 60 to 70% of all dementia cases. So dementia is a catch-all term for neurodegenerative disorders, and it incorporates things like Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, vascular dementia, which affects the blood flow into the brain, which can be caused by things like stroke and so on. So Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia.
The discovery of Alzheimer's disease goes back to the 1900s and is named after the work of German psychiatrist and neurologist Alois Alzheimer. In his portraits, he's got short, tidy hair, glasses that don't have arms on them that are wedged on his nose, and a very luscious mustache. Dr. Alzheimer was working at the Institution for the Mentally Ill and Epileptics in Frankfurt, Germany, with patients suffering from dementia. Researchers say he was obsessed with the idea that psychiatric diseases are just like any other disease in the body, and he wanted to find a case where he could prove it. And in 1901, he found that case. Her name was Augusta Dieter. Augusta was a housewife in Frankfurt, and when she turned 51, her family started to notice she was acting strange. She had delusions her husband was cheating on her, and she would go into these fits of rage. She was forgetful. She had problems with her memory and talking. When her symptoms became too much for her husband, he admitted her to the hospital under Dr. Alzheimer's care. Augusta's condition worsened to the point where she lost almost all cognitive ability. And in 1906, 5 years after she was hospitalized, she died.
So it made sense for Dr. Alzheimer to have a look at her brain after death to see if he could see anything unusual that was happening in the brain.
What did he find?
He found clumps of protein, which he noticed were amyloid plaques, and he noticed neurofibrillary tangles in the neurons, which were tau tangles. Alzheimer essentially found the biological hallmarks of what was later going to be known as Alzheimer's disease. So we think that these particular proteins building up in the brain is what causes the memory loss and loss of function that we described.
Over the past century, a lot of work has been done looking at the disease. And Jennifer says scientists have been getting more information about how it develops.
I mean, a lot of people think that Alzheimer's disease is a natural consequence of aging, that it's not a a disease in itself. It's just a thing that happens to you when you get old. And it is a distinctive disease. You can see the pathology in the brain. But it is a physical disease that has pathology associated with it. It's not the same as normal aging, and it's not inevitable. It's not something that will happen to everybody at some point. So there has to be a way of stopping it. There has to be a way of doing something about it. There has to be a reason why some people get it and some people don't. So just because you have the genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's disease, it doesn't mean you're going to go on and get it. So why do some people get it and why do some people not get it?
This is a question that is key to Jennifer's research. Right now, if you thought you had Alzheimer's disease, there isn't a single test that you can just go and take and be like, 100% have it. Jennifer says it requires a series of diagnostic tests to try and rule out other diseases.
The problem with the way we diagnose Alzheimer's right now is that by the time someone notices subjectively that they have some symptoms, it's likely that the disease has been progressing in the brain for 10 or 20 years. So by the time you get clinical symptoms, the brain has done all it can to try and rewire around the damage. So our brains have a great capacity for what we call neuroplasticity. So if there's damage, it'll just compensate in whatever way it can. By the time your brain has stopped compensating for this damage, it's done all it can, and that's when you start to get the memory loss and the loss of other types of function. So we really need to figure out how to pick up Alzheimer's disease in that 10 or 20 year period so that we can start to proactively slow down or stop the symptoms from progressing.
There have been drugs put on the market to try and treat Alzheimer's, but they have had limited success.
There's been a 99.6% failure rate in getting these drugs licensed and available for people. There's only 5 drugs on the market that can be used, which are helpful, which do, for some people, really help manage the symptoms that they have. But there aren't, at the moment, any drugs that can slow down the symptoms in a really meaningful way or stop them from progressing.
So Jennifer and her team are about to start a clinical trial to try and pinpoint the moment Alzheimer's starts to develop and these amyloid proteins and tau tangles start growing on the brain. And to do this, they are asking 250 people across the UK who do not have Alzheimer's but have a high risk of getting the disease to take a series of tests over the course of a year.
Our aim was to take every test that anybody in the field had ever thought of that could be useful in Alzheimer's disease and incorporate it into one study. So if you're looking at all those things in the same people, you're not just looking at whether or not MRI is a useful biomarker for Alzheimer's disease or whether this particular blood test is, you're looking at them all in combination. So it might be the case that 3 or 4 of these things could be used together to give you a reliable indicator of whether that person has Alzheimer's disease before they start to have clinical symptoms. And the goal would be to have a better alternative than PET imaging or lumbar punctures. So it might be the case that you have a blood test plus an eye exam plus a particular cognitive test, and those 3 things together will tell you with 98% certainty that the person has Alzheimer's disease, and then you can bring them into a clinical trial, and in the future you can start treating them at that point.
Now, I feel like we should do a disclaimer corner. Just because you are in the study does not mean you are going to get Alzheimer's.
We need people at high risk, at low risk, and everywhere in between, because we need to be able to compare people against each other. And we can't really reliably say for any one individual how likely that person is to go on and get Alzheimer's disease, because we know that some amount of amyloid protein in the brain is normal, and we're talking about quite an early stage here. So even if we took a person who we thought had a higher amount of amyloid in the brain and we said to them, okay, unfortunately you're going to progress into Alzheimer's disease, we could be completely wrong. So we wouldn't want to give somebody that information, because then they might make all sorts of life decisions that were completely unnecessary, or they might worry, feel like they've got a ticking time bomb. And we just can't say with any certainty whether that's going to happen to them.
Jennifer's big hope is that if they're able to get the data out there and other researchers are able to dig through it, they might be able to stop Alzheimer's before it even starts.
And then we want to get together all the data, anonymize it, and get it open to other researchers as quickly as possible, because there's going to be so much data, so much more than we can analyze by ourselves. So we'd like it to be as open science as possible, so that the more people that are looking at this data, the more people are working on these questions, the faster we'll get some answers.
And maybe then they'd be able to find a drug or a treatment that can help before the damage is done. This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons and additional music by Yunya Nishimura and Lee Rosevere. Special thanks to Jennifer Lawson. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can find us on Twitter. You can tweet at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook. We've got a lot of Facebook Lives and other cool things going on there. And of course, we've got a website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.